The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
Josh Manson.
Yeah.
Josh Manson.
You were down on that move. I was.
It was
not anymore, right?
Well, you know, I was being told that it was a significant move at the deadline. Was it a significant move? I mean, he had a huge goal last night, and at the end of this run, if they have a parade, we're going to remember that as one of the signature moments, right? It was helping him get the overtime win in game one against St. Louis. So for, I guess, that moment it was. But has it been that big of an impact? Is it going to make that big of an impact over the course of the entire playoff run? Well, we'll see. But, man, that was awesome last night.
Just the game winner, you know?
And he was mic'd up last night, too, which was cool. Have you seen that?
Dude! Hey, Dante, can you grab that from the DMs? The Josh Manson mic'd up? That is... So I have not heard it. It came out in... Get out of here, Stokely.
You're done. Get the F out of here.
Just gave me that Bruce Arians.
Hey, how many Pedialytes does he need a day? Goodness gracious.
Well, I mean, he's got to balance out a ratio from the night before.
Holy cow.
Multiple Pedialytes.
I mean, he's got two full-size Pedialytes over there.
It doesn't take a detective to put it all together.
Oh, my gosh. Man, guys, that was so fun last night.
I bet.
It was so fun. It's hard not to just get swept up in it. Are we doing game two, Tyler?
If you're in, I'm in.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in. I just got to get it cleared at home, but I think I'm in.
All right. Yeah.
Wait a minute. You think you're in? You were making this big claim yesterday that you were going to do the mini DMAC and do the whole playoffs.
I didn't make a big claim. That's what I'm going to aim to do.
Just so you know, I am totally okay with limping into the building. Like, I don't have to spend the $300 and some, right? I didn't say your specific tickets. I just said I don't need $300 tickets. That's all I implied, right?
I didn't buy them.
Okay.
I was told the price, like, when they were purchased.
All right.
Like, hey, here's our ticket.
You know, if that's what you get, I mean, I won't say no, but just know that I'm okay with limping into the building.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Fellas?
Hey, I almost said Sierra. Did Russell Wilson have a box to himself?
Dude, so Stokely brought that up, too. By the way, I didn't realize when he was sitting courtside at the Nuggets game, they have the seats to the left and right of them bought.
Yeah.
No one can sit there.
Oh, yeah.
And then, but that was the case. He was up in the box, but he was in the box alone.
There seriously wasn't a single other person. Now, they didn't show him a lot. So I don't know if, like, the entire box happened to go get food at the same time. But the one time that I noticed, I mean, it was literally him in that box nobody else.
I know.
Okay. It was weird.
This is a little bothersome. Right?
Like it is.
It's a little like, is elitist the right word? But you're kind of positioning yourself as, hey, I'm part of the community. I'm man amongst the people. Well, you're not really if you have separation. I mean, other than having like Secret Service agents, it's like having, you know, the president or the vice president or some head of state there. Like, come on, man. I know you make a lot of money and your wife's famous, but you're a football player. You're in the town. Like you're at a sporting event. Like, let's be a part of it.
Okay, so the court side, I actually get that one. Okay, the court side one, that's a little bit tough. You're sitting down there. Everybody's got easy access to you. Just, you know, give me a little bit of buffer here, a little bit of personal comfort zone. But a box? I mean, a box? Like, you don't have buddies? Like, your offensive linemen don't want to go?
I saw Reisner there.
What, was he?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, by the way,
not
I don't
in the
know,
box. He was sitting over near where we were sitting.
I don't know for a fact that nobody was in the box all night long. I'm just saying the one shot that I saw, it was weird to see him by himself.
But we've seen Peyton Manning, one, courtside, right? He was there with Stoke, and there were people sitting next to them. There weren't buffer seats. We've seen him in years past where he was up in the stands, you know, like the fifth row or whatever.
No, it was like the 10th row.
So, you know, just kind of not a normal seat. It was an expensive seat, but not courtside.
Yeah.
And there certainly were people around him. So if Peyton Manning can get away with just sitting in amongst the people and not be bothered the entire game, Russell Wilson's a bigger celebrity than Peyton Manning. I'm not buying that at all.
No, I'm not claiming that. I'm not claiming that. But I do understand, like, a little personal buffer zone. That's nice. But hey, when you go sit courtside, you know exactly what you're signing up for, right?
It's a little like Howard Hughes eccentric, can't be around people's. Like, it's overly eccentric to me. It seems odd.
I will just I will just share with you, and Tyler, I know it's something that you already know. After the years stacked up, this is what drove people crazy about Russell in Seattle.
Oh, no, there's no question about it. I know that for a fact.
I know you do.
I know plenty of guys that played with him. You know, I missed Russell Wilson by 1 year. When I left, he came in the next year, which means I've got a lot of friends that ended up playing with him, a lot of former teammates. Nobody dislikes Russell Wilson, but there was a separation. Are we dudes or not? Are we in the crew or not? Right? And that box thing, that was a little bit weird. But to his credit, he's brought Garrett Bowles. He's brought guys to the Nuggets game and in the box. So he has done that previously. Just last night, that looked weird.
Thanks to all our listeners in Arvada for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day.
Shout out.
It's a sign if you're a local or not, how you pronounce Arvada.
There you go. Arvada.
Arvada. You're part of the California invasion. It's a telltale sign.
Yes. Yes.
You guys have fun, man.
All right. So are you handling tickets? I'm sending you a Venmo. Is that what we're doing?
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
All right. I'm going to give you the freedom to decide where we're sitting. Okay.
All right.
And then all I got to do, I just want to Venmo you. All right. Right. Can we just work that out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real quick, cool. Zach, you stayed through overtime. You were there for the moment in your seat.
I have the video of it up on my Twitter.
Okay, people going crazy.
Oh, it was so fun.
How does it rank in terms of sporting events you've been to just as a fan, just hanging out?
Right near the top. I wouldn't say it's at the top. I mean, that was a really, really cool moment, top three. I'll remember it forever. It was wildly entertaining, the angst and the nervous energy in the building compared to the overtime win against Nashville in game two. So in two of these three playoff games in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, like, we've had two overtime games. But the angst in this one, because, like, it never felt like – because the overtime game two was on the heels of a 7-2. It never felt as stressful as it felt last night.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a little, you could tell it wasn't like excited energy. It was angst. It was nervous energy.
I was nervous sitting at home just watching that thing. I mean, shoot, they were dominating, outright dominating that game from start to finish. Even in the first, a lot of people said they looked so rusty. And okay, I guess they had some posts, if you want to call that rusty, I guess. They were dominating from the beginning to the end. And overtime, what was it? They had like 13 shots on net, right?
It was 13-0.
13-0. That was dominating. But at the same time, it felt like, holy cow, seriously, you know, all it takes is one stupid play, one stupid goal, and the Avalanche could lose a game that they should have won.
Well, and I think that ties into the second round jinx, Zach, that you and I talked about yesterday, right? Of like, wouldn't that have felt like the latest chapter in it of you outshoot your opponent by 30 shots and you're down 1-0 in the series and you lose at home because you hit the post 5 times.
Yeah.
It just sort of felt like, if you're a fatalist like maybe I am, or believe in Murphy's Law, or think here we go again, like it was stacking up that's what we were coming in here to talk about today.
Yep.
So it was nice that it did not go that direction. But when it finally went in, it was more of a phew
than a
celebration. Yes.
All right, so I have to get the heck out of here. I gotta go bring my son to a doctor's appointment.
Okay.
But I did just get a text message, totally unsolicited, and I can't emphasize that enough, based on the conversation we were having about Russ and how it looked like.
Okay, wow, all right. I'm curious.
This is someone, and I'm not going to say his name because I just don't know if he wants me to say his name, but this is someone who is very connected in the community. He's connected. You guys know him. He said, listening to y'all, he, Russ, had a couple people from his marketing group in the box. But he did have the arena set up a plexiglass barrier between his and the one next to him, which no suite has that in the building.
No way.
That's
for reals? Oh, my gosh.
And look, you're entitled to do whatever you want. But by the same token, if you do those kind of things, we're entitled to go, huh, is that a little weird? And what does that mean? And what is that saying? Like, that's kind of elitist. That's kind of a,
it is.
Hey, I got to separate myself from the normal people, from the fans, from the, you know, Joe public who's in the arena. So it's eccentric.
Then I said Howard Hughes because that's the name that pops to my head. But
look,
like,
it doesn't make him a bad guy.
No,
it doesn't
not
make
at
him
all.
A bad guy. It doesn't make him a bad teammate. It doesn't make him anything bad at all. But it's a little something, right? Peyton Manning sits in the eighth row.
Right.
and we're getting plexiglass dividers put up. Is that too? Oh, wow. Are we sure you're good on that one? You feel confident on that one, Zach? Thumbs up.
That is.
I can't. I just got the text message. I just know the guy that is very connected and works with a ton of Broncos through the years and has even been in the studio with other Broncos.
Okay. All right.
Well, you know, look, there's any number of explanations for it, right? Like, maybe he's a germaphobe.
Yeah.
And to go out in public, and especially nowadays, he wants to make sure that there's nobody near him when he's sitting courtside, and he puts up the plexiglass.
They had to break Stokely's studio to get him in here with Zach, right?
We certainly have seen plenty of plexiglass in the last 2 years, so it's not that strange. But when other athletes, and the most prominent athlete living in this town right now is Peyton Manning. The most prominent athlete in the last 10 years has been Von Miller. He just sits courtside and it was no big deal. It does make you wonder.
Would Russell go to the game? Would he go to a Nuggets game if it was in the second row?
Oh,
I'm serious.
Man.
I'm serious.
So it's courtside or it's box. Is that what you're saying? I think I agree. Yeah. I do. I think the answer is no. No, he would not.
And maybe, look, we're probably finding things to nitpick about at this point.
Look, if I had that kind of money, I wish I could do those sort of things too, right?
Yeah, but if you had that kind of money, would you?
I don't think so.
That's the issue, right?
I don't think so.
I think any of us could look at it and say, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that rich people do that I'd love to do. I'd love to fly in a private jet, right? Not have to go to the airport 2 hours early, stand in the security line, kill time if it goes quick, or not kill time if it takes an hour and a half to get through it. I'd love to do that.
No, I think I'd do the jet. I think I would
for
do that.
For sure.
I mean, if I could afford it, if that was within my living, I would do the jet.
That would be probably number one on my list.
Yes.
But getting an entire box at a game so I can be there by myself and put a plexiglass between me and the box next to me.
It's just your marketing team.
That is
we're focused on the wrong stuff anyways. We're
that
focused
is
on the wrong
bizarre.
Stuff.
Bizarre. But yeah, Tyler, it sounds like you and I had the same reaction when Manson's goal shot went into the goal in overtime, gave the Avs the 3-2 win. It was more of a phew than a celebration. We will get into that and much, much more as we break down the Avs taking a 1-0 lead coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbis here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and Dina.
James Marlott from TimberFan.com filling in for DMAC. Tyler Palumbis is here. Tyler, it was a relief last night in overtime when Manson shot, snuck past Binnington. Not much got past him last night. He was fantastic. 50-plus saves in the game. I think 51. The Avs had 54 shots, only got three past Binnington. It was a relief when it went in. The Avs, in a game they really dominated for the most part. There were a few moments in the game where St. Louis, at the end of the second period, maybe the beginning of the third, kind of had a little bit of control, and I thought Darcy Kuemper came up big in those moments. But we got to hear Blink 182 at the end of the game. It's the new tradition with the
Avs. Oh, they did have it.
They played it.
Okay.
We did some research today.
I heard some controversy on that as if maybe it wasn't played.
Well,
but it was.
So here's the story. Normally they play it like in the third period of a game if it's a laugher.
Oh, okay.
Now, with the Avs, they have a lot of laughers. So you get it a lot. When you're up 7, you know, when you end up winning 7-2, when you're up 5-0 after the first period in game one against Nashville, you can play.
So do they not play it if it's a tight game?
They do not. They do not.
Okay.
So then
they play it
in a tight game. If they win, they play it after the game. So it is sort of the Avs victory song.
Got it.
And the cool part about it is it's like a early victory lap kind of song.
It's a
lap.
That's actually a little bit of a dangerous game to play there, right? That's a dangerous precedent.
A bit, but I love it. I love that they have their song.
It's kind of reminiscent of St. Louis 3 years ago when they had the Laura Branigan song Gloria that became kind of their anthem in their march to the Cup. So for the Avs, it's Blink 182. We got to hear it last night. Hopefully we get to hear it plenty more times as they got the fifth win en route to Mission 16W. I thought the Avs were rusty yesterday. And it wasn't just the hitting the post. It was bad line changes. It was, they had more offside penalties last night than I think they had in the entire Nashville series. Just like, man, another one with just a little bit of timing off and a little bit out of sync. I thought they were rusty. They certainly, you know, came at them in waves like they normally do with the 50-plus shots. But they escaped last night.
Oh, well, I mean, there's no doubt they escaped. A lot of people said they looked rusty. I didn't. I didn't think they looked rusty. I thought they looked like they were dominating that game. You know, Ryan O'Reilly opens up the series with the first goal of the series. And it's like, oh, of course it had to be him, right?
Yep.
Of all people, it's going to get the first goal. The Avs are trailing. And it did feel like, what's happening here? Avs are all of a sudden trailing. That's not supposed to be happening. But then as the first went on, I think the first time that I started to get nervous was at the end of the first when I realized, oh man, the Blues just played penalty free. They stayed out of the box. Stayed out of the box for the first. And that's when Avalanche just crushed teams. If you put the Avalanche on a power play, they're going to kill you. They're going to take advantage of it. Lo and behold, at the end of the game, Avalanche had a power play. They did not take advantage of it. They had the bad line change, as you mentioned. They stopped the PK, right?
It looked like they were going with 1 second left in the penalty kill.
Exactly.
The bad line change.
I guess maybe that's rust. I don't know, man. I guess I'm not smart enough about hockey to know what the heck went wrong there. That looked like a little bit of bad luck there, but you know, that was rust. I know this. When you put 53 shots on goal or 54, you deserve to win a hockey game. The Avalanche absolutely dominated that game. There's no question about it. Those dang goalposts kept getting in the way. Some people were talking about, oh, you know, that's not bad luck. That's just bad hockey. You're not shooting well. I'm like, oh, forget that. You know, I mean, if you hit those goalposts, that's supposed to go in. At least one of those two. That should have been a 4-1, 5-1 type of game. But you get to the end, and it felt like, oh my gosh, anything could happen here, right?
Yeah.
And you got to overtime. I was nervous as all get out because it felt like, man, game one, all of a sudden it feels like a huge deal. Like you got to survive that game. You survived adversity. First off, you dominated, which was cool. You survived adversity. You went to overtime. You found a way to get it done. And now you're up 1-0. But if you lose that game, you're down 0-1. Not the end of the world, but it's a way different feeling.
Yeah, and the biggest thing when you're a prohibitive favorite is to not give the opposition hope. Right. So if it's the NCAA tournament and it's a 2-15 game, right, if that game's close at halftime, all of a sudden that 15 seed has hope and now you're in danger territory. When you're the Avs and you're a 4-1 favorite to win the series, if you give away in one way of putting it, game one, and now St. Louis has home ice advantage.
If they lost that game, that was the definition of giving one away.
Yeah. And all of a sudden the Blues would have had hope. Of like, oh, hey, we got that one. I mean, they outshot us 54-20-something, and we stole the win. We got home ice. We can do this, and then all of a sudden it starts getting scary. So the fact that they were able to escape, if they can take care of business tomorrow night, then it's like, okay.
Well,
St. Louis has got to be thinking then, are we going to beat this team 4 out of 5 times? Probably not.
Yeah, man. I mean, for all those reasons, I feel even better about that win. I actually feel a little bit better than if they would have won 5-1. First off, they deserved to win 5-1. That's what the score should have been last night. They were absolutely dominating. Obviously, there was great goaltending going on for the Blues. But the Avs just played fantastic. But it feels even better knowing that you did survive it. You know, the Blues aren't going to give up after game one, but that is the type of game that if you go out there and you survive their best shot in the first two games, it could be a sweep, right? I mean, by the time if the Blues go out there, if they were to play good hockey again, I don't even know if they would say they played good hockey last night, actually. They had good goaltending.
They did. Although it reminded me so much of game two against Nashville, not just because, hey, you put up 50 plus shots and you couldn't get anybody past them. But in that game, I thought the Avs kind of made life a little easy on Connor Ingram of just, hey, I'm going to be right in front of you and I'm going to shoot it and you can see it. Right. So it's like, yeah, you're putting shots on goal, but it's not that extra pass where it's like, man, the guy had no chance to get that one. There was a lot of those last night, too, where it's, hey, Bennington, here, it's coming. Get ready for it. Here you go. It's like, you know, throwing a 100-mile-an-hour fastball to a major league hitter when he knows you're throwing a 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Right, right.
You're kind of taking away a little bit of the deception, and you're making it a little bit easy on him. But I'm with you in terms of I feel good about the fact that last night they found another way to win, right? So against Nashville, they had two blowouts. We know they can do that. They had the game two against Connor Ingram where the goaltender, you know, to some extent, you could say he stood on his head. They found a way to win that one. Game four, they didn't play very well. They were down after, you know, in the third period, flipped the switch, won that game.
Yep.
And then last night, they won with none of their stars, none of them, scoring a goal.
You know how they won? One of the best trades in Avalanche history, baby. That's right. The guy that James Barilat said, that's it.
Yep.
That's all you're going to do.
Yep.
You're going to go out and you're going to get Josh Manson, and you think that that's what you need to go do in the middle of a cup run? That's right, baby. Josh Manson coming through when it's all on the line.
If you had the parlay card with Nichushkin, Girard, and Manson as the three goals last night, you went in and turned in your 2 weeks' notice today.
Oh, my gosh. By the way, on the Nichushkin thing, I did laugh because D-Mac goes out of his way every single time he says his name. Say, it could be Nichushkin, it could be Nichushkin. It's whatever you want it to be. It could be said either way. There's no right or wrong way. The announcers, I think verbatim said, it's like choo-choo train.
Yeah.
They said that during the break.
Yeah.
Nichushkin.
Yeah.
D-Mac.
Well, and there has to be a right way to say it.
That's exactly right. There can't be two right ways. No, there's only one right
way. There's a right way and a way.
I mean, there might be like a just defeated feeling like, hey, we can't get anybody to say it right. So just, you know, get kind of close. We're going to be okay with it.
Right. There's a right way.
But there's only one right way. That's right.
So it's Nichushkin, and he got the first goal. Girard, who I thought had a kind of a rough night. He had a few blunders, but he got a goal, got the second one. And then Manson, look, and I wasn't necessarily critical of that trade in particular. It was, don't try and tell me that's a significant trade at the deadline.
Well, and I guess to your credit, Manson, he really struggled to get acclimated with the Colorado Avalanche. It was not overnight. I'm not even sure you could say it's been a huge addition just yet. He showed up big when they needed him to. They had two shots from downtown with Girard and with Manson. I mean, those were from way downtown. Those were awesome. So, you know, bottom line is you snuck out with the victory. It feels great right now. I feel like the Avalanche are right where they're supposed to be. I do want to say, as I was just mentioning D-Mac, you know, D-Mac is going to be out for the rest of the week. I think the majority of you know, but D-Mac's had a rough week or two here. Unfortunately, he did lose his brother and just a very, very tragic incident that happened. So he's traveling back east right now. And I'm very honored because D-Mac has told the listeners and online, you know, if anybody's out there that wants to donate in honor of his brother Brady, actually he's directed people to Pedal with Columbus, which I'm very, very grateful for. But there are two causes that actually line up. D-Mac's brother dedicated his life to cancer research, as did his wife. Obviously, Pedals Columbus is about ovarian cancer. So the two line up, but very, very grateful to D-Mac and everybody keep him in your thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, for sure. And that's very cool. Pedal with Columbus. It would be a great way to support D-Mac,
yes,
honor his brother, and for sure help a good cause. All right. Transitioning to the Broncos. Russell Wilson was in the house last night.
Yes, he was.
He's part of the way they're going to try and make some big plays and reignite that offense. But who else may play a role in that? The answer may surprise you. We'll tell you that coming up next.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Tyler, I think it's safe to say the Broncos offense in recent years has sputtered.
Sure.
Haven't produced a lot of big plays. Haven't put a lot of points on the board. An interesting spreadsheet came out today. I saw it on Twitter, and it listed how often a running back creates a big play, or did create a big play this past season, with a minimum of 100 touches.
What does that mean? What does a big play mean?
20 yards plus.
Okay, that's a big play. So, I mean, that's so we used to always say, Mike Shanahan used to said we need five or six of those a game, and if you get five or six of those per game, you're going to win the football game the majority of the time. I mean, if you get one 20-yard gain, number one, you flip the field, you get the momentum, but more importantly, you flip the field. So whether you capitalize on that drive or not, You're going to flip the field. You'll pin them back, and you'll give yourself a better opportunity for the next drive, right? So 20 yards, I would agree, that's a good definition of a big play.
So any guesses as to which running back in the NFL had the most big plays?
Well, yeah, I've got a great guess. Okay. I've got a great guess because I know you. I know you very well. I'm not even looking at it. I'm looking at the back page here, so okay. I'm not even looking at whatever it is right here.
In the entire league.
I know your agendas.
No, I don't have an agenda here.
No question that if this topic was brought up by you that you're going to say Melvin Gordon is leading the NFL.
No, he was 15th, though.
15th.
Now, in terms of percentage. So he had 26 big plays.
So I'm sorry, back up. I got ahead of myself here. Are we just talking about running backs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was 15th in the league in running backs, had 26 big plays out of 231 touches. That's a percentage of 11.3%. So 11.3% of the times he touched the ball, it turned into a big play. That was 15th.
Good.
Javonte Williams actually had one more. He had 27, but he had 246 touches. So he had a slightly lower percentage, 11% of the time. Combine the two. I mean, their stats last year were so amazingly similar, right? The exact same number of carries. I think Melvin Gordon had 15 yards more rushing. I think it was 19 to 903.
Like, almost identical in every single category.
In this category, they were almost identical as well. Okay. 11%. Melvin Gordon with a little bit more. Jonathan Taylor had the most in the league with 55. Now, he didn't lead in terms of percentage because he had so many touches, 372 touches.
Okay.
And just a huge part of the Colts offense. Nick Chubb was the best in terms of percentage with 17.3%. Does either one of those guys have the ability to improve upon that percentage this year? Because that's not terrible, 15th and 17th in
the
league.
No.
But the Broncos offense, as I said coming into this, was, you know, they sputtered. They didn't seem to have a lot of big plays. They couldn't string drives together. I think they need a little bit more of a home run punch out of that position than what they got a year ago. And which one of the two do you think? Now I have my answer, and you could probably guess. Do you think is the right answer? Because when you go running back by committee, you tend to get what they got last year was the exact same results out of both guys. I think it's another reason why they need to pick a guy. Go with them, have a featured back. How do you win?
Well, here's the deal. Let's first just talk about a gain of 20 yards and what that means for a running back. That's hard to do. That doesn't happen very often in the NFL. And when you gain 20 yards, that generally speaking, especially if it's a running play, I know we're accounting for passes in here as well, but if it's a running play, if you gain 20 yards, everybody did their job. Everybody, right? I mean, because if somebody doesn't do their job, you might be able to bounce off one tackle. Somebody's going to catch up to you. You might gain 5. You might gain 8 yards on a great play. You're not going to gain 20 unless everybody on the field is doing their job. So that first off is a good sign about a healthy offense when running backs get that. Second off, that's impressive. So I mean, I would just say that's impressive for both of our guys to be in that category. Neither one of them are home run guys. To think that either one of them are home run guys, you're fooling yourself. They don't have that top end speed, and that's fine. I don't need my running back to be a home run guy. I need my running back to shine when everything is bad. So when all 11 guys do not do their job, I need my running back to be that guy that says, I'm going to lower my shoulder and I'm going to gain 4 yards when it should be 1. And honestly, I pulled up another stat here because I saw we were going to do this. And, you know, I pulled up the broken tackles. And Javonte Williams, he did lead the NFL in broken tackles. But to Melvin Gordon's credit, he had a lot of broken tackles also. He did. So Melvin Gordon was at number 8. Javonte Williams is at number 1. Javonte broke 31 tackles over the season. Melvin Gordon broke 20 tackles over the season. This whole debate between Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams, I feel like it all just gets convoluted a little bit here because it feels like you're picking a side. The bottom line is they're two good running backs. I've chosen Javonte Williams for a handful of reasons. Number one, I trust him to not put the ball on the ground. I do not trust Melvin Gordon to not put the ball on the ground. And number two, the main reason, he's young and he's cheap, and it's a position in which guys just fade out of the NFL after 3 or 4 years most of the time. So this is an evolution thing. This is just go with the younger, more physical guy. Javonte Williams, to me, would be that guy. But I totally disagree on the workhorse thing. If we got both these guys on this team, I don't see any reason for Melvin Gordon not get a lot of carries. We got him here.
I think part of the reason you see the fumbling from Melvin Gordon is because he stands on the sideline for two series and he comes back in, and I always equate it to a boxer.
Right? Oh, that's BS.
You got to have a lather going when you're standing on the sidelines and you come in. I think that leads to more fumbles. So I'm not to be part of it.
I'm going to bring up a name here that people are going to lose their minds. I'm not trying to tell you that Philip Lindsay is the best running back in the NFL. He's just trying to hold on to a job in the NFL. But Philip Lindsay, I think he's got zero fumbles over the course of his career.
Sure, but it's different for every guy.
Ball security is a mindset.
But I think that's part of the issue with Melvin Gordon. I would also disagree that he's not a home run hitter. He's not the fastest back in the league, but he had like the, what was it, 70-yard touchdown run at the end of the Giants game in the opener.
He did.
The year before in the Jets game, he sealed the deal in that game with a 50-something-yard touchdown. He does have more of a big playability than Javonte Williams, so I think it's kind of a, well, what's the philosophy of how to get to it? Because I agree with you, if the play isn't perfectly blocked or executed or there's a breakdown, I'd rather have the ball in Javonte Williams' hands because he can make something out of nothing more than Melvin Gordon.
And 9 times out of 10, that's what it's going to be in a running play. 9 times out of 10, you're not going to have a hole that a truck can run through, and you're not going to gain 20 yards. You're going to have to break some tackles and make a tough physical run.
But I would go with, hey, we're going to execute this properly. We're going to run it right, and we want the guy who can make the most of it when we do it right. And to me, that's Melvin Gordon. And I think the best rushing attacks in the league, Jonathan Taylor's the best running back in the league. They don't split carries with him. He's on the field. He's the one getting 372 touches and having 55 big plays. So I think that's how you have a premier running attack. That's how you have Terrell Davis, Clinton Portis, Mike Anderson when he had some of those big years. I believe you got to have a guy, you got to have two, and you got to split it evenly. It's all the more reason I would go with Melvin. It's all the more reason I think Melvin's going to be the starter week one.
Well, Melvin might be. He's getting paid enough money that could easily be the starter. I think when this season ends, it's going to look differently. It's going to look about 60-40, maybe even 70-30 in favor of Javonte Williams. He will get more carries, and that's not necessarily a knock on Melvin Gordon. That's just what happens in the NFL. Running backs, they get phased out.
I just think if the Broncos were ready to turn the page and totally trusted Javonte Williams, they wouldn't have brought Melvin Gordon back.
Well, Melvin's a good player, so there's nothing wrong with bringing a good player back on your team.
Yeah, but it's just leading to a potential controversy, right? Melvin Gordon's not going to be happy getting 20, 25, 30% of the carries.
I totally agree with that. Melvin Gordon's got midseason drama written all over his forehead.
Right, so
all
why over set his that forehead. Up? If you trusted Javonte Williams, you could sell me on Mike Boone's going to be healthy. We were excited to see what he could do, and you could sell me on use one of your 3 fifth-round picks on a back that provides some depth. That to me, if you were sold on Javonte Williams being the guy, would have been the smarter route than to bring in a guy who's got midseason drama written all over him.
There's no question he does. Yeah,
I'm with you. So yeah. It's a little bit of a head scratcher, which makes me ask the question or makes me think to myself, why on earth would they do that?
Here, let me just say this. I'm not mad that you've got two good running backs on the team. So that's cool. I hope they find a way to handle it. I hope there's no drama in the room, but it seems like there will be.
Yeah, it was just interesting. You know, Melvin Gordon technically outrushed Javonte Williams last year, and Melvin Gordon had a higher percentage of big plays than Javonte Williams. It was close.
He had less broken tackles. But he had less tough runs.
Slightly better.
He put the ball on the ground a whole lot more.
Back in 2021.
Right.
I don't know how that's going to magically
I'm going to let you just toss a break with that.
Heading into this season. All right, when the Broncos gather for training camp, it will be a more star-studded affair than we thought. We'll tell you why coming up next.
You're listening to The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Tyler, we got some Broncos news today from Mike Kliss. He let us all know that prior to the Broncos hosting the Cowboys for a preseason game on August 13th, Dallas will come in a couple days early and have at least one joint practice, maybe two, still ironing out the details with the Broncos down at Dove Valley. We've seen this in recent years. Last year, the Broncos were in Minnesota for this. We didn't get a chance to see the Vikings, but they had joint practices up there. A few years ago, the Niners came in here, and it was kind of eye-opening.
Smoked us.
Of how energetic and loud and intense that group was,
and
how they dominated on the field. It was like, uh-oh, this may not be a great season for the Broncos. Turned out not to be, that we got an early indication. Cowboys coming in here, it will bring a lot of stars to town, right? That's Dak and Zeke and CeeDee Lamb and you know, Jerry will probably be walking around on the sidelines.
Sure, he like will.
The whole circus that comes with the Cowboys will be here. That will definitely be cool. It'll be fun to be down there and check it out. When you were playing joint practices, was that a good thing, a little break from, you know, beating up on the same guys every day and going against your teammates? Was it just like, man, that's what the games are for. I don't want to do this any more than I have to. What's sort of the player's perspective on these joint practices?
You know, I see the pros and the cons for sure. I would say there's probably more pros than there are cons to a joint practice. I actually don't like it for a first-year head coach, though.
Really?
For a first-year head coach, you need every last second you could possibly get. And when somebody else comes into town, that is now a joint practice. You are now on somebody else's schedule. Now it's a mutually agreed upon schedule, but you don't get to just start the period over. You don't get to take your time and reset things, whatever it might be. And it becomes a little bit distracting. You know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, I know as a player, there was a part of me that loved the challenge of it. There was part of me that was like, okay, I'm not quite ready for the intensity that comes with it, right?
Right.
Like you get into routine during training camp and you go up against your guys and you're trying to make the squad. And as a young guy in particular, hey, that was pretty scary going up against new guys. You go up against Elvis Dumervil and he beats me 9 times out of 10, but at least I know the way he's going to beat me 9 times out of 10. And I know, a fighting chance against it. You bring in a new team, and all of a sudden it's just fresh bodies. Now that, generally speaking, is great for a team. Of course, now I'm just talking about what it was like as a young guy. It's good for a team to bring that in because it gets more competitive naturally. You know, you go against the same guys every single day. There's a certain degree that you take care of one another, and it's just a little bit mundane. You bring in new bodies, you bring in a new team, and you get a lot of new stuff that comes with it. Now, there's also distractions. There's also fights. There's also, man, my rookie year, we had the Dallas Cowboys come in.
Okay.
They were on Hard Knocks that year. And there were multiple big time fights that happened that year. It's just like a guarantee. You bring somebody into town for a joint practice, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You're going to have an all out melee, especially if they're on Hard Knocks, because
we see it every year on that show.
Yeah.
Right? It can even be a cornerback and a receiver getting into it.
Right.
But you see it every single year that there's some sort of fight when they have their joint practice.
So the way we set it up was we had our offense versus their defense on one field. We had our defense versus their offense on another field. And one of the fights that got featured on Hard Knocks, we were on offense. We were handling our business. It really wasn't that. There wasn't that much animosity. There wasn't that much tension. But there was some stuff going on the other field. And you could feel it brewing, right? And then all of a sudden, I look out of the corner of my eye, and I see big old Flozell Adams. Remember Flozell?
Yeah.
That was a giant human being. And he's got his helmet off, and he's just wailing on people. It turned into an all-out brawl. I ended up getting fined by the O-line because I took too long to go over there and get in the fight. So it just turns into stuff like that. I think it is good. It brings a lot of it just brings the next level of competitiveness to the table. But for first year head coach, I think I'd rather see Nathaniel Hackett just have the time to himself.
Yeah, I mean, I can see from a player's perspective, like, there is the increased chance that someone's going to make you look bad.
Yeah, of course.
Like, 'cause you don't know what's coming at
you. I'm trying to make the team, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I actually think that's a good thing.
Of course.
Right? Because that's what you're going to get on Sundays is somebody who's trying to make you look bad.
There's a difference between my personal ambitions as a young player versus what's best for the team.
Right. Right. But it's if it turns out to be one practice, you know, I mean, heck, we have this debate all the time with OTAs when, you know, Vic Fangio decides to just punt on an OTA day and have field day. What's one practice going to matter? If it's one practice with Nathaniel Hackett, probably not that big of a deal. Two, though, I know it sounds crazy. It's just one more, but it does start to sound like, well, you know, by the time that's the game week and you have the day off for the game, like, it starts to be like, well, you kind of burned up your whole week. It sounds like a Seinfeld bit.
Right.
But it almost turns into that.
Well, and the thing is, with young coaches that are in their first year, it takes longer than you think to install stuff. It takes longer than you think for people to pick up your language. So all of a sudden, you got to fast forward a little bit into game planning mode when you should be spending an extra day or two just working on the absolute basics. I got another great story, though, from a joint practice. I was out in Washington, and we did our training camp in Richmond, Virginia. Fortunately, I never had to go on the road to do a joint practice. That would be terrible. I would never want to go on the road for it. If they come to you, at least it's a little bit less disruptive, right?
Yeah.
But we had the Patriots come into town. Jay Gruden was the head coach, and I'll never forget it because Jay calls up the team before the first practice, and he's like, "Hey guys, Coach Belichick wants to say something to everybody." And so we get both teams together, we all come up, and Belichick just takes over, right? And all of a sudden, Jay Gruden, like, he's an assistant coach to Bill Belichick at this point, and Belichick is addressing both teams. He's threatening us. He's telling us what's going to happen if there's any fights. He turns to us in Washington. He's like, "Fellas, I'm telling you right now, if any of y'all get in a fight, I'll kick you off this field faster than you know it." We're like, "Hold on, like, are you our coach? Like, what do you mean you're going to kick us off the field?"
And then it's just your facility, not like you're at New England's facility.
At our facility. And Jay's just looking at him like, yes, sir, uh-huh. Finally, Belichick, he goes, "Jay, what happens if one of your guys gets in a fight on the first play of practice?" And Jay's like, "Well, I guess we're going to kick him off. I guess we're going to kick him out, right?" Lo and behold, the very first play, Pierre Garçon got in a fight, and D'Angelo Hall. Thank you. Yeah, D'Angelo Hall on defense. Both those guys got in a fight on the first play of practice so that they could intentionally get kicked out of practice so that they didn't have to participate.
It's funny you say D'Angelo Hall because that was the name I was trying to think of when I said you see a DB and a receiver get into it. Because he was, and he's played for a bunch of different teams.
Oh, yeah.
But it was on Hard Knocks. He was, I think it was the Texans were playing the Falcons maybe or something like that. And he was the guy. That must be his thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Enjoy practice. Just get kicked out.
Yeah.
Get the day off.
I mean,
off.
Belichick tells me all I got to do is get in a fight and I get a day off here. Okay, cool.
Easy enough. Go hang out
in the locker
room.
I got to tell you, man, though, that was so funny seeing Bill Belichick just take over our practice and seeing Jay Gruden just say, "Yes, sir." Like, that is, "Yes, sir. No, what do you need, Coach Belichick?"
That's maybe not a good sign of where things are going for the team that he's doing that to. But I do think ultimately it'll be good for the Broncos. It's early in camp. So we don't have the exact schedule yet, but Tyler, I would assume that's still days when people can come down and sit on the hill and watch what's going on.
Definitely.
So, it'll be huge right at the beginning. Russell Wilson, the excitement of that. As it's kind of tapering out, that'll probably be toward the end of the couple of weeks. That would be a great way to cap it if you can go down there.
Quick positive that I didn't touch on, and this is the most important aspect of it, on the positive side. You get a whole lot more controlled reps with your ones, right? So when you go out there for the preseason game, well, your ones play one series, maybe they play two series, maybe they play a half depending on what game it is. But in practice, you get to go good on good. So you go ones on ones, and it's a controlled environment where, in theory, people shouldn't get hurt. So you get much more game time simulation with your starters in practice than you would in the game.
Yeah, and for us and for the fans, it'll be a ton of fun. So circle your calendars. August 11th, for sure that day, that's the one that's been confirmed. The Cowboys will be in town, joint practice with the Broncos prior to the preseason game on August 13th. All right, the Avalanche escaped last night. They got the win in game one. We'll talk about it as part of the big story of the day coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.